Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and so glad that you've joined us today on the broadcast. Today, of course, is our Worldview Wednesday edition of the program. So we generally have somebody on from World Magazine for the first part of the program and then a second guest afterwards, and we'll be doing that today on the broadcast as well. I'll tell you who those two guests are here in just a moment. Let me give you just I'll do a little bit of housekeeping here and tell you about a couple of other items right here at the top of the broadcast. A lot of times I get going during the broadcast and then I neglect to let you know about these things. One, I should tell you that yesterday we did a broadcast. It was entitled Gay Christian Agenda Exposed. You probably know that there's been a lot of articles written, a lot of things said recently about the so-called gay Christian movement. In other words, that people can be gay and Christian at the same time. And so there's been a lot of things written and said about that. And yesterday I did a broadcast on it. And let me just say that that broadcast is receiving an awful lot of attention out there on sermonaudio.com. That's www.sermonaudio.com. If you didn't get a chance to hear my discussion yesterday with Dr. Evan Leno, then I would recommend you go out there. You can watch the webcast, the video webcast, or you can listen to the audio out there. But it's www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. And you can listen and see and hear all the information out there about that broadcast. It was a good one. Coming up, well, let me tell you this first. I just mentioned the live webcast. Let me mention that that there is now an option for you to be able to watch the Knowing the Truth radio program. Jim here in the studio has been doing an excellent job of providing really good graphics during the program. I bumped into Jim providentially at a conference, and he's been helping us out to get the webcast side of our broadcast taken care of. He's got many, many years' experience in the television industry, and he has just done an excellent job, and so we appreciate the work that he's doing. But there's now our live webcast at sermonaudio.com as well. So if you go to the homepage of Sermon Audio, right there in the right-hand corner, it'll say that there's a live webcast taking place. You can click on that, and it'll go ahead and launch the live webcast for you to watch. There's also a couple other places that you can go for that. One, you can go directly to our page on Sermon Audio, which is www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. You can go to my webpage, which is knowingthetruth.org. It should be launched there as well. So all of those places, and maybe a couple others, you can go in order to click on there in order to watch the broadcast. Now, initially when we did that, there wasn't much to see. You know, it was like watching a car accident. It was just nothing here to see, people. Just keep on moving. It was just my web camera that was showing. So all you got was this rather unappealing headshot of me sitting in front of the microphone. But now with Jim's help, we actually are getting a number of other graphics. Like today, we'll have the folks that we're talking to, their image, their picture will be up on the screen. Some of the things that they're associated with, like Thomas Kidd with World Magazine, he will be a graphic for World Magazine, will be there and so forth. Sometimes we're running some video in there now, and so it's a lot more interesting to watch as a result of his work. Let me also mention, if you can't watch the video for some reason, and you say, hey, I just want to hear the live streaming audio, well, we've got a site set up for you to be able to do that as well. That live streaming audio is at ChristianTalk660.com. Christian Talk is all one word, and 660 is the actual numbers. So 660.com. If you go there, just click on the Listen Live button, and you'll be able to get the streaming audio, not only for our program, but for all the programs here on Christian Talk 660 as well. By the way, that only mentions the AM side of it. There's also a 92.9 FM as well, and that's just a local transmitter, and that's just good for the greater Greenville area. The 660.com is a 50,000-watt station. There's about 2 million people, I think, within that footprint of that 60,000. It carries it on in four states, all of South Carolina, parts of North Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia. So that's a big microphone there that the Knowing the Truth is going out on. So there's all my information about how you can listen to the broadcast. Let me tell you who is on the broadcast today and what we're going to be talking about. First up on the broadcast today is Thomas Kidd from World Magazine. I want to talk with him about some of the buzz surrounding the selection of the new pope. We've been seeing a lot about this in the news. I find it really quite interesting to see that just the reaction from a number of folks about the new pope. So we'll talk with Thomas Kidd about that. Thomas is the Associate Professor of History at Baylor University and also a Senior Fellow at Baylor's Institute for Studies of Religion. His most recent book is Patrick Henry, First Among Patriots. So Thomas will be up first with us. On the second half of the program, we're going to speak with Dr. Nelson Klosterman. He's the Executive Director of Worldview Resources International. I'll give you more details about what we're going to speak to him about in the second half of the broadcast, but you won't want to miss that discussion with him as well. And just a quick sneak peek about what's taking place tomorrow on the broadcast. Pamela Geller is going to be with me on the broadcast tomorrow. And I don't know if you're aware of who Pamela Geller is. You probably have heard of her before, but Pamela is the founder of the American Freedom Defense Initiative and the Stop Islamization of America. She's the author of Stop the Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to Resistance. And she also wrote a book called The Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration's War on America. And what I'm going to ask Pamela to comment on is that there's a news story coming out of Florida. It says this right here. I'm on the page where I saw the post come out. It's been kind of quiet so far. I had to really dig for this story, but it says this. Florida mega church pastor partners with former CARE chairman to oppose anti-Sharia bill. And so here they are working together to oppose. There's a bill in Florida that would not allow Sharia law to be put into practice here in the United States. And a mega church pastor, they have 15,000 evangelical Christians in his church. He has joined forces with one of the former heads of CARE, you know, of course, who is an Islamic organization, and they are opposing the bill that's trying to stop Sharia law from being used here in this country. So an interesting story. I want to get Pamela Geller on the program tomorrow to talk about why this is so wrong-headed, how this pastor is so naive about what is taking place. We'll talk about that on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast tomorrow. By the way, you can participate in any of these programs, 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Let's go to our first guest here today. We've got Thomas Kidd is up first. Thomas, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas, bring us up to speed. I read some of your articles that you wrote about the Pope, but it was still, at least one of them was still in the process of where the Pope was being selected, and you talked about a couple of things there. You could mention a few things in that article, but let's bring us up to date on what's been taking place with the selection of the new pontiff.
Well, most of your listeners probably know that they have chosen Pope Francis as the new pope, and he had been the Archbishop of Buenos Aires in Argentina. It is unclear at this point how dramatic of a change this represents. Geographically, it's a really important change because this is the first pope in a long, long time to be chosen from outside of Europe. and indeed the first pope to be chosen from the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. Now, the pope is Italian ethnically, but he's from Argentina. So I think some observers have thought, well, this is a way to sort of bridge the transition to still having an Italian as the pope, but someone from Argentina as a way to sort of ease into the new reality for the Catholic Church, which is that European Catholic churches are struggling very badly, and you have these beautiful cathedrals that are almost completely empty for church services, but that the Catholic Church is doing fairly well in areas of especially the global south, including South America and sub-Saharan Africa, which is a real growth area. And so there's been this tension going on for a long time in the Roman Catholic Church about why is the church hierarchy so Eurocentric when the growth areas for the church are definitely not in Europe. So I think it's an important moment, and I think from an evangelical perspective, we can hope that Pope Francis will continue to hold the line on issues about the sanctity of human life and some issues like that, and not introduce liberal accommodations.
Mm. Do you see in it, and this may be just a little bit of my cynicism, but is it quite a shrewd political move because there's so much interest right now in Latin America?
Well, you know, I think that the Catholic Church is doing fairly well in Latin America and in Argentina specifically, but there's a lot of concern among church officials that there is a lot of growth in Central and South America among evangelical and Pentecostal churches, Protestant, obviously. And mm-hmm. so that if you have a Latin American pope, that this symbolically will reflect that the church takes Central and South America seriously, and that they're aware of these sort of challenges from evangelicals and Pentecostals. So, I think that evangelicals can view this and say, well, we appreciate that the Catholic Church has really held the line on some very important social and cultural issues, while we continue to have some, significant theological differences, and that the Catholic Church sees evangelicals and Pentecostals as competitors for adherence in places like South America. So, I think that we are certainly interested observers as evangelicals, even if we don't theologically sync up with Catholics on every issue.
Mm-hmm. And I would even say so, the major issues, especially with dealing with soteriology and, extremely important doctrinal truths. I think that there is quite a move among the Catholic Church itself then at this ecumenism. And politically speaking, I think that this was appears to be, a bit of a strengthening of that, some sort of a reach in ecumenism. But having said that, I don't see many people writing about the idea that this, I think, he is the first Jesuit pontiff.
Yes.
Speak a little bit about who the Jesuits are and why it is, so interesting then that the Jesuit that a Jesuit order, somebody from that order, would be chosen to be the next pope.
Well, that's a great point. The Jesuits are an old missionary and educational order within the Catholic Church, and in the past century or so have really been known for theological liberalism, and the Jesuit universities, both in Europe and America, have often gone very liberal or almost entirely secular. And I think that Pope Francis is known as being a very conservative Jesuit. But how conservative that means is hard to say. We'll find out more, I think, as we go along. But I think that we can be optimistic on some issues like, for instance, gay marriage, that Pope Francis has in very recent years made some very clear comments that that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that gay marriage is extremely problematic for the traditional view of marriage and also for children. And so I don't get a sense that he is going to be a liberal on these kinds of social issues that I've helped to build some bridges between evangelicals and Catholics in the past decades.
Now, the Jesuits also were kind of anti-Pope, kind of, I guess it would be the way to put it. They were always kind of questioning, you know, the exalted role of the Pope. We find that this Pope now likes to refer to himself as the Bishop of Rome rather than, you know, some of the other names associated with the Catholic Pontiff. And also, they were the ones that did the Counter-Reformation during the Reformation period, right? Very strongly going after the reformers and you know, trying to turn that thing around when Martin Luther and many others during the Reformation period, all of Europe was the gospel and the Reformation teaching were spreading like wildfire across Europe. So how do those two things, you know, their kind of anti-view of the papacy itself and then the fact that they were such, you know, antagonists of the reformers, how do those two things play in here?
Well, right. There's a deep history going back to 16th, 17th, 18th century that the Jesuit order was actually suppressed by the Catholic Church in the 18th century. The troubles between the papacy and the Jesuits got so severe that the Jesuits were banned by the Catholic Church for some time, beginning in the 18th century. But then I think in the 20th century, the Jesuits took more of a liberal turn. And I think that, you know, that Pope Francis, both probably as a Jesuit and also as a Latin American, who did not seem to have a lot of sympathy for what was called the liberation theology that was distinctive among many Catholics in Central and South America, that had sort of communist Marxist influences on Catholic theology. I don't think that the doctrinal side of that Pope Francis showed any particular sympathy for, but I do think that the identification with the poor is going to be a mark already of Pope Francis's tenure, and he's already made some changes in the way that he dresses publicly, looking less regal than some of his predecessors. I mean, the Pope for the Catholic Church does function as a kind of monarch or king. Pope Francis has chosen to dress much more simply in public and already has done some things that have shaken up some of the more conservative Catholic commentators about that on Thursday of Holy Week he went to a youth prison in Rome and washed the feet of prisoners, including some female prisoners, which had never been done before by a pope, and just this identification with the poor, with the disabled. There was I think quite a moving moment during Holy Week when he picked out a child with cerebral palsy and picked this child up and embraced him and kissed him and made a point to do this. I think again from an evangelical point of view, if the message is that all life is valuable, that there's no life that is beyond God's love, and that those we can heartily affirm those kinds of things. You know, taking care of the least of these, wonderful. But I think sometimes those things in the Latin American context have also come along with a kind of theological liberalism, maybe a sort of interfaith ecumenism that can become theologically problematic.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is very interesting and very telling what we see taking place because with the Pope, like you said, there are a number of these photo ops that are taking place. I noticed that, you know, the word humility is being used over and over again with this particular Pope. And as you mentioned, you know, what are you advocating for here, Pastor? An unhumble pope? You know, is that what you want? I'm just saying that that don't be fooled by the photo ops and don't be fooled by the messages here. He takes the title of the Vicar of Christ upon the earth. And the significance there you just mentioned about he functions as a monarch or as a king. These are not humble positions in the office of the Pope itself. We just brought out about Jesuit theology, and you know, you're talking about things that relate to communism and social gospels and all of these types of things. I think that people, it's very telling in our society today, the photo op will mean more to them than looking at what the actual theology is. And I guess my message is that, you know, these are great, you know, some of the things that he did, wonderful, but don't lose the bigger picture to the evangelicals, you know, to study up on what the actual doctrines are. And I think you'll find that there really has been no change in those doctrines from the time of the Reformation all the way up to now. There's been, you know, no significant change in those doctrines. So there is still a huge theological barrier between the two groups. Having said that, let me ask you about the one big, you talk about problematic, the one big issue, and you've written about this on your in your posts on World Magazine as well, and that is the whole issue of these predator priests. And even more specifically, you highlight one that was still allowed to attend the conclave, even though there were documents that were discovered that he was harboring and protecting some of these predator priests. Let's talk for a moment about that.
Well, this focuses on the former Archbishop of Los Angeles, Roger Mahoney, who has become, I think, the focus of a lot of American and European disgust with the toleration of these predator priests. Now, I should say that I don't think that there's any allegations that Mahoney himself was a predator, but just gross negligence, I think, by all observers, think that there was gross negligence in covering up and indulging and protecting these priests who were being accused of going after children sexually, and so he was removed or stepped down as the Archbishop of Los Angeles, and yet he is still a bishop in good standing with the Catholic Church. He has not been defrocked, and so because he's an archbishop, he was allowed to attend the conclave in Rome. And many people, even some very highly placed people in the Vatican, sort of indirectly suggested that it would be a bad idea for him to show up. But no, he had to make the trip anyway, and is tweeting all along the way about how wonderful everything is. And really, I think, a very provocative way, just sort of flaunting his position and saying that he deserves to participate and so forth. And at one point, he even compared himself to the suffering servant of Isaiah 53, you know, all these attacks against him. And he really is, I think, by most observers, just an extremely unattractive character.
Well, see,
and that the Catholic Church probably should have taken stronger action against him.
This is the great contradiction with the Catholic Church. You know, on one side, they seem totally irrelevant and unable to even police their own. Just recently, you know, we had Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden were in Rome, I guess, and they were given communion. So here they are, the most pro-abortion people on the planet, you know, have been involved in some of the promoting Planned Parenthood more than any other administration in our history, something that is supposed to be a tenet of the Catholic Church. And they can't even stop them from taking communion. There's no church discipline whatsoever, which is supposed to be one of the major tenets of the Catholic Church, that, you know, they have the authority, that, you know, it's the mother church and all of this. And at times they just seem completely irrelevant as to what's taking place. I bet you if I took a microphone out on the street and I said, give me a quote from one of the most recent pontiffs, even the one now or the one before him or even John Paul, you know, one of the most famous ones. Just give me a quote from him. I bet you out of Catholics that I would interview that they couldn't even tell you a single quote from him, which is just ironic to me. Then when I turn on my television set and I see every news station is following the smoke coming out in the greatest detail, they've moved their whole news teams over there in order to see what's taking place. I just can't reconcile these two things. You know, why is it relevant at all? And yet they've had the worst possible scandal that you can imagine, the abuse of these children. I don't understand why people are, you know, basically still going or why they still find them relevant at all. But there's something here, and I'm not quite sure what that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it has to do with the size of the Catholic Church and their expertise at spectacle. I mean, there's really nothing like the papal conclave in Rome meeting in the Sistine Chapel and this sort of thing, and the smoke it's just great for TV, you know. But I think that Protestants, you know, tend to be in these much more decentralized, smaller denominations. But, you know, I think that all these scandals, you know, among other things, should remind us that we need to have our house in order, too. It's not just the Catholics that have problems with overlooking sex abuse scandals and so forth. So it's really appalling when you look at things like what's going on with Roger Mahoney. But it's also a reminder for us Protestants that we need to mind our P's and Q's as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, good point. Well, thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you for writing these articles in World Magazine. Let me tell the listening audience that you can go out there to check out the articles that have been written by Thomas Kidd. He's got the two that we were talking about today and many others out there as well. But it's www.worldmag.com. Go out there and you'll find the latest in Christian news and views. Thomas, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a commercial break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to switch gears just ever so slightly, because we're actually talking about this idea of politics as theology in practice. So that's going to be a very important point. And we're going to be talking about, you know, how do we think through these theological truths and then apply them to our daily life. We'll be speaking with Dr. Nelson Klosterman. He'll be our special guest here in just a couple minutes, and we'll talk about this idea of making application, theological application, to daily living. We'll be back in just a few moments.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Sam Hunter with 721 Ministries.
I start each week asking the Lord what it is He wants me to say and discuss with all these businessmen across the upstate, because everybody in the South has heard everything there is to hear about the Bible. But if you approach it with a different angle and say, have you thought about it from this way? What is really Jesus trying to say to you? I get to just talk about what I think Jesus is really saying to us in this busy world.
Friday at 8:11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Spring is here. Enjoy the beautiful Swamp Rabbit Trail with Rides for Strides, Saturday, April 27th. This is a family-friendly event, so grab your bikes or your walking shoes and join us at the rail car near Furman. It's an easy ride into Traveler's Rest, where we end at the cafe at Williams Hardware. Come support Strides, a Christian nonprofit for kids who are behind in reading and math. To sign up, go to stridestutor.org or call 246-9898.
Personal Defense Outfitter is here to help you equip, train, and defend. We offer quality handguns, shotguns, and rifles with competitive pricing and a family-friendly atmosphere. We also offer training classes, including CWP, with highly trained instructors who make the classes enjoyable and informative. Whether you're looking to equip yourself with a quality firearm or seeking training, come by Personal Defense Outfitter, 12 South Main Street, Travelers Rest, or call 864-601-2097. That's Personal Defense Outfitter, your home to equip, train, and defend.
Ever feel like there has to be a better way to manage your finances? Focus Focus on the Family is proud to partner with Crown Money Life Coaching, the only award-winning online solution that effectively implements envelope budgeting for today's cashless world and provides you with a personal coach. And now you can get your first coaching session free of charge. That's right, it's completely free. Call Crown Money Life Coaching at 800-215-3147 to get started. Join thousands who are achieving financial success. That's 800-215-3147.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Just before we go to our next interview, just want to make sure that you know about an upcoming conference that's coming here to the upstate of South Carolina. It's going to be right here at in Greenville. Actually, the location is in Simpsonville, but the Greenville area. And that is the Master Plan for Fatherhood. And you can get all the information about that. It's going to take place on April 19th and the 20th. I'll be speaking at that event along with my good friend Dan Kruver. We'll be speaking there as well at that event. And it's going to take place right here, as I mentioned, in Simpsonville, South Carolina, on April 19th and the 20th. And so if you want to find out about that event and all the speakers that are going to be there and the registration fee and those types of things, go out to www.ncfic.org. That's ncfic.org. Let me give you a phone number as well if you'd like to register for that event. Scott Brown, who's the executive director of that that organization that is putting on this event, he will be with me on the broadcast next Wednesday, so we'll be speaking with him about this conference and why it's so important. But their number for the national, I always forget what the C is, whether it's conference or National Coalition of Family Integrated Churches is what the rest of it stands for, but their number is 919-556-6511. That's 919-556-6511. And there's also a link. I saw that they were advertising on sermonaudio.com. And so if you go out there, there's a link in the text featured items down the right-hand side of the page. And you can click right there on the link, and it'll take you right to their website. So you don't want to miss out on that. Second half of the broadcast today, I wanted to talk with Dr. Nelson Klusterman. He's the executive director, I should say, of the Worldview Resource International. And he had a recent post in which he concluded that post by saying this: in short, we cannot talk about the common good without defining the good, and we cannot define the good apart from metaphysics, which is to say, we cannot define the common good, the quotes around that, apart from theology and without reference to God. Well, when he made that statement at the end of the post, it made me think about something that I've been seeing happening in social media and other news outlets and these types of things. I've noticed that there is a strong anti-government sentiment among Christians right now, and I can completely understand why with everything that's taking place in the Obama administration. I completely understand and adhere to it, you know, this strong anti-government sentiment. However, along with that, there's been a renewed interest in libertarian views. And most recently, this sense or this renewed interest has most recently come to light in the gay marriage or same-sex marriage debate. I've heard a lot of Christians say, well, the government has no business being involved in marriage anyways, and so they're taking a completely hands-off approach, almost a secular approach, and saying, you know what, if the government just gets out of marriage, we shouldn't even be there anyways. That'll resolve this whole thing. But my question is, and this is where I wanted to speak with Dr. Klusterman here today, or Klusterman, is that really a Christian view? Because when I look at Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, it says this, "For he, the ruler, is the minister of God to thee for good." So does the government, and specifically as Christians, should we be encouraging the government to be involved in good things, not just, you know, protecting us, not just that role. That's one role. But it does. Is there a way to think about Christian ethics in such a way that we actually are involved in helping the government to do good? And how do we do that in a pluralistic society? So here to help us think through this, which I've entitled Politics as Theology in Practice, which was the title of his post, is Dr. Nelson Klosterman. Now I think I've said it three or four different times. You want to give us the proper saying of your last name?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me onto your program.
Yes.
I appreciate the opportunity. And the last pronunciation was the correct one. It's Klosterman.
Klosterman. I was told that it had a long O, but I am a master at mutilation of last names. I like Smith and stuff like that. You know, those I can handle. But thank you so much for being on the program with us today. What's your view then of what I just said? I was reading this morning your chapter, by the way, in Living for God's Glory, an introduction to Calvinism. The overall editor, I think, was Joel Beakey, with a foreword by Michael Haken. But you have Calvinistic Ethics in chapter 27 of that book, and I thought that that chapter went along well with what we're talking about. So let me throw it to you to give us a little bit of synopsis of, you know, how we should think through these issues.
Well, thank you for the opportunity again. And let me begin by making a distinction with regard to our thinking about this. The distinction really is between the one and the many. It's a philosophical problem, but it involves a political application. The one and the many is actually the question of how do we integrate, that is, how do we relate concerns of individual rights, individual goods and interests, together with collective rights, collective interests, and collective goods. And the art of politics is the art of, as I say, integrating or coordinating these competing interests. My concern, as you have placed the problem before me just now, my concern is that history shows an oscillation or a movement, a pendulum swing frequently between the one side or the other side, getting the emphasis and the attention. And by the way, they're not, in history, they're not mutually exclusive pendulum swings. That is to say, we can be living in a society in a time when there is strong statist impulses, strong collectivist impulses, being met at the same time with strong individualist resistance and strong individualist claims.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as Christians, we want to steer a middle way, a third way between those two choices, because as defined, libertarianism, now I'll pick up that term from your comments,
mm-hmm.
Libertarianism as a political philosophy, your listeners need to understand, is not distinctively Christian. It appeals to Christians because Christians tend to have a strong value for the individual, a strong value for liberty, freedom, and expression, and things like that. And so the notes sounded in the song of libertarianism are very, very appealing to Christians. But I'd like to warn your listeners that there's nothing particularly transcendent, nothing particularly religious or particularly Christian about a libertarian philosophy. In fact, it can be very, very destructive to the Christian faith.
Hmm. How so? How could it be destructive? Let's just go with that. I guess we'll start with that point.
Well, libertarianism, as I understand it, with the exaltation of individual rights, doesn't seem to pay adequate attention to the legitimate rights and callings of groups for existence, not only, but for operation in society. You take, for example, the family. The family, which is dominated by libertarian considerations, is no better in terms of values, in terms of negotiating competing claims within the family, say, than a collectivist impulse. You have individuals who simply want their gratification, who want their satisfaction, and who want their pleasure within the family structure. It's actually the Christian family that is able best to integrate the claims of individual needs, rights, and interests together with the group needs, rights, and interests. It's in the family under the Lord that we learn matters of authority, sacrifice, love, self-denial, generosity, and things like that. So as a political social philosophy, libertarianism is just as destructive to the Christian family and the notion of Christian family as is statist influence.
Mm-hmm. I've often said that the one thing that I fear more than an over-intrusive government that we're experiencing now is anarchy. And I'm really concerned about, you know, too much of the, I think that much of, like you say, much of the points of libertarianism appeal to us. And I certainly think on the financial side of things, it's just gotten, they're much needed in their call for the financial side. But the social issues where they want to take a hands-off approach, I just think that this will end up in anarchy and will cause a, as you mentioned, a tremendous amount of trouble in our society. Would you agree?
Oh, I certainly would agree, yes.
Let me ask, how does this play out then? Should Christians, and we're looking towards Calvin at this time because you have written specifically about Calvinistic ethics, what does this look like then in everyday life? Should Christians then be involved in government, and how should they do that in a pluralistic society?
Well, that is a wonderful question, wonderfully broad and deep and difficult question, but I will give it my best shot.
Okay.
In the time and the forum you have here. I think that, yes, Christians need to be involved politically and need to express their viewpoint and the application of biblical principles to public life. In a pluralistic society, however, what this means and what this requires of all of us is the ability to understand, the willingness to understand each other, and to place our respective visions in service to what then I would call the common good. And you recall from my post that we cannot define the common good without reference to God and without reference to transcendent reality. And that's what I would like to encourage your listeners about, namely that as Christians, we demonstrate with character, with language, with attitude, with relationships, we demonstrate what it means to live humbly and charitably and tactfully and graciously in a society before the face of God. Now, what that means in terms of concrete reality in politics is that it does not mean, first of all, that we need a Bible verse for every political position we take. It does not mean that we need to have, as part of our justification for political choices we make, a particular Christian doctrine or Christian confession. What it means is that overall we seek the kind of justice that gives people what they have coming to them in terms of protection, in terms of advancing the good, and in terms of preventing and punishing the evil. And that evil and that good can be defined economically, it can be defined socially, it can be defined politically, religiously, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I know I'm being general, I'm being vague, but I don't think that there is a particular recipe for Christian involvement in politics except the guidelines that are offered in terms of the cultural mandate that we find in Genesis 1, that we protect family and the family in terms of procreation, in terms of stability, in terms of growth and development, but also that we enable and provide for flourishing in society in terms of dominion, that is to say, in terms of exercising responsible service and rule in the creation and the world that God has given us. But as Christians, we do that also within a broader context, and that broader context is the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God refers to his rule, his government and his presence and his power in the lives of his people, in the life of the world, and in the life of society. Now, that doesn't mean a theocracy. It doesn't mean that we're looking to have Christianity adopted as a state religion. I know there are some Christians who defend that position. I do not defend that position. I believe that one of the marks of truly biblical Christianity is a toleration, that is, allowing people of other faiths and other heart commitments to live alongside and to be fully vested with political right and economic right in our society. And again, I know not every Christian will agree with me on this, but that's the position to which I'm committed.
It sounds like you're saying that Christians need to understand the issues and then be persuasive about their viewpoint as to which way we should go with these issues. Is that a fair way to say it?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think that's a fair way to say it. And if I could point to a particular example of what I'm trying to suggest here in the area not of politics but sociology.
That'd be great, yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend that people look at the study, the sociological study of Mark Rigneris offered regarding the different outcomes in children of parents who have same-sex relationships. And his study was published in Social Science Research in 2012, and it elicited a firestorm of criticism and reaction. But he makes the point, which I think is a valid one, that social science can't prove things but only describe reality. And that's what he set about to do in this study. He studied and tried to describe the effects on young adult children of men and women who had same-sex relationships, and that their parents, in other words, these children were raised in such homes with such parents. I would recommend that as Christians, that we make use of what are called the empirical sciences, the humanities, and so on, to formulate our persuasive arguments that are transparent to anyone who wants to look at them and study them, transparent, that are well done, well crafted, responsible, and peer reviewed, and those kinds of things. And Mark Rigneris has done a great service, I think, as a model and a paradigm of how this might happen.
Yeah, I guess the point there, too, is that Christians don't need to be afraid of the empirical data, because if this is something that we can build a theological case for, that it's good for us, it's good for our society, the data will then line up with that as well. So going to a place like the Heritage Foundation, where they've done a number of studies on these various issues as to why children flourish much greater in a traditional home, the data will line up with that theological position. Is that correct?
Well, I think it is correct insofar as the data are to be interpreted. The data are to be understood. And my point in the post and in this conversation is that they cannot be interpreted or understood without a theological commitment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to urge this caution that we must be careful that we not present or pursue data which merely confirms our theological position or our theological biases. We have to be confident enough in our method of research and our method of presenting the data that they will, in fact, bear out a reality that's consistent with what God has created.
Mm-hmm. Would Christians find help, then, in reading about and looking to Calvin and his role in Geneva?
Well, they would to this extent. First of all, let me say negatively that Calvin's role in Geneva cannot be replicated today. Calvin and Calvinism have been directly responsible for the emergence of many democratic ideals and democratic principles that we enjoy today without perhaps even acknowledging their origin in the thought and practice of Calvin.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to warn your listeners that we cannot hope to replicate either Calvin's position, practice, or Geneva today. That having been said, let me go positively on to say that what we can learn from Calvin, among other things, for example, is the shall I say the value of the state in itself in ordering and governing and structuring human relationships and human life.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we would have some disagreements with our libertarian friends. The notion, the slogan, the bumper sticker that says "Get the government out of my life" is not a particularly Christian impulse.
Mm-hmm.
God ordained the government, and he instituted authority. There is no authority existing which is not from God, in the, at least in terms of his providential permission. Moreover, in terms of a fallen, broken humanity, government is necessary for the protection of the good and the righteous, and for the prevention and punishment of evil. And that evil can happen within families, within homes. It can happen within churches. Mm. It can happen within schools. And so the notion that the government has to stay out of my home, that may sound good, but what do you do then when parents abuse their children?
Mm-hmm.
Or spouses abuse each other? Now, I know that's all slippery language. It's all capable of being misunderstood and misconstrued. It's all capable of being an avenue whereby the state asserts greater and greater control over our lives. I understand all of that. But the alternative being presented by some of our libertarian friends is simply an unacceptable swing of the pendulum that, as you indicated earlier, can quite easily and quickly result in social and economic anarchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Klosterman, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about these issues. It's so important for us to be able to think through these issues and then make application to them in our life. And certainly your writings and the books that you have written and your blog posts and all of those things have been such a help in that area. Thank you very much again for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and give you a website and that on the way out of the broadcast today.
Thank you again, and you're very welcome.
Okay, that was Dr. Nelson Klosterman. His website is worldviewresourcesinternational. That's all one word, Worldview Resources International. And you can go out there, .com, and you can go out there in order to find out about the books that he has written on this particular subject. So you get a lot of help there in that sense. I had the one book in my hand here right now. He wrote a chapter in a book with Joel Beakey called Living for God's Glory, An Introduction to Calvinism. And in that book, he talks about Calvinistic ethics. And so that's a worthy topic and a broadcast in and of itself, but certainly related to what we were talking about a minute ago. Let me mention that we were just saying then that we can't impose Christianity. We're not looking to impose Christianity on the rest of the folks living in the country. We're not looking for a theocracy, to impose a theocracy. But there is one group that is looking to impose a theocracy, and that is Islam. And Islam, through Sharia law, is trying to coerce people by force in order to bow the knee to Islamic teachings. And that's what we're going to talk about on the program tomorrow. My special guest on the program will be Pamela Geller. Pamela is the founder and the editor and publisher of a website called AtlasShrugs.com. She's also the executive director of the American Freedom Defense Initiative and Stop Islamization of America. She's the author of the book called Stop Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to Resistance. That's put out by WND. And so we'll talk to her about that tomorrow. Specifically, I want to speak with her about an interesting news item that has come out where a Florida megachurch pastor, Dr. Joel Hunter, is actually says he's okay with Sharia law coming into Florida. He's a pastor of a 15,000-member evangelical church in Florida. He has teamed up with a former chairman of CARE, which is an Islamic group, And he is teaming up with him in order to say Sharia law is just fine. So we want to get Pamela's thoughts on that. Remember this. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life at Liberty Radio, Christian Talk 660, WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660, and also on FM 92.9.